Rod's Pulse Podcast number 65, Night Kitchen Interactive Interview, and Bohemian Financial Rhapsody.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back.
Is this just fantasy? Financial landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up at your buys and see. I'm now a poor boy, high-yielding casualty. 'Cause I bought it high, watched it blow, rating high, value low.
Well, that piece should sound familiar. That's called Bohemian Financial Rhapsody by Jeff Smith. Of course, I found that piece on the PodSafe Music Network. Jeff Smith is known for his parodies and intros that he's done for many podcasters, including Adam Curry. And it's obviously a parody cover based on Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. I bet you've never heard a song that mentions Bernanke and CDOs. That stands for Collateralized Debt Obligations. It's a riot, so especially considering what's been going on in our financial world and in the States. So I think you'll get a kick out of it. Stay tuned to the end of my podcast to hear the full song. And I also have a link on my show notes to the lyrics. If you can't understand all the words, you might want to take a look at the lyrics. They appeared on the Huffington Post blog. So today I have a treat. I have, a very interesting discussion. I interviewed Juan Leon, who's a senior consultant at Night Kitchen Interactive. Night Kitchen Interactive is an award-winning design firm providing online learning, interactive exhibits, marketing communication solutions for corporations and nonprofit organizations. Juan is a quite impressive guy. He's developed innovative award-winning courses at Harvard, the University of Michigan, and Kyoto University in Japan. Since 1997, he's specialized in designing technology-enhanced instructional systems. He's pioneered web-based multimedia education at the Institute of Environmental Studies in Kyoto University. And he's developed both CD-ROM and online courses for clients in numerous industries, among them telecommunications, healthcare, pharmaceuticals, and so on. So without further ado, here's the interview with Juan Leon. Juan, thank you very much for joining me today. I appreciate your time. I wonder if you could just start off by telling me a little bit about yourself and how you got hooked up with Night Kitchen.
Sure. Thank you, Rod. It's nice to speak with you. I've been working with Night Kitchen for about 5 years as their senior consultant. I focus primarily on e-learning projects. And as you know, the world of e-learning extends in a lot of different directions. So for us, that includes not only some of the more traditional e-learning, but online communities and working with a number of other evolving technologies that maybe fall under the broader umbrella of e-communications, you could say. My own background is in academics and distance learning. I became involved in developing online tutoring systems and other kinds of distance teaching tools in the 90s, and I still remain involved in that to some extent, but primarily I work with Night Kitchen on the projects that involve commercial clients and also cultural and nonprofits.
What can you tell me about Night Kitchen and their focus, their philosophy, you know, who their typical clients are?
Night Kitchen is an interactive design studio, and that's been its core, the core of the company for a long time. And over the years, we've grown to extended into areas like e-learning, web marketing, other areas where we can help clients with a larger initiative, a larger communications campaign. So to your point about the corporate world, a lot of times when training is happening in that context, it's part of some larger change happening in an organization. And so it's helpful to be able to provide a email piece that speaks to the change and a commercial that plays over the web, the e-learning itself, informational pieces, follow-up assessment to see about the effectiveness. And so we've grown into doing all those things while we're still working in the core areas, which are the museums and the nonprofits. We've done work for the Smithsonian, other major museums that we're very excited about. And there's a lot of interplay we find in the technologies, in the inspiration. You know, to your point about academics versus the corporate world, sometimes the corporate world is more strict about seeing a return on investment, seeing the impact of the training in new behavior, you know, in certain results, performance in the workplace. Whereas what we're doing in an academic environment has maybe a longer term or less specifically defined, you know, outcome. But sometimes it's helpful to turn around and ask in an academic context, what really are we hoping to have these folks be able to do once they finish this course? You know, academics, I think, is becoming more practical in its orientation. So there's a mutual back and forth between the corporate and the academic, and we find also between museums, nonprofits, and the corporate.
Do you still do other more traditional type of e-learning or applications on CD or kiosk? I guess the museum work is sometimes developed for a kiosk. Is that right?
That's right. There are really two drivers there. One is the internationalization of training. So this is going on for been going on for a while, as you know, but it's more increasingly pervasive. So if we develop training for a company headquartered in New Jersey, it's very likely we'll need to do something for a Japanese affiliate or a Latin American division. And so we need to be able to address the cross-cultural issues and the technology behind the scenes that enables the various forms of the training to go out. That's driven us to offer things on CD-ROM, because there might be an outpost, company outpost somewhere where there's no broadband connection or perhaps no internet connection at all. So when you're distributing to the entire world, you certainly have to have different delivery mechanisms. And the museum area, yes, we do a lot with kiosks, and often there'll be other collateral. There might be posters or other material that goes out as to support an exhibit or some kind of event.
So you handle all of that?
Yes. Well, because we're really at the center, you know, as a design company, we're at the center of both producing that work and then coordinating the work of others who might be involved. So we might bring in a video production house. We might bring in an illustrator. We've worked with people from Marvel Comics, you know, but you'd have to have some group that's at the center coordinating all of that. So we're typically in that position.
Of course, I'll have a link on my show notes to the Night Kitchen website. In fact, I wanted to just tell my audience to go and look at your website, because it's kind of unique, clever use of Flash technology. I suppose one of your more important platforms these days is using Flash. Is that right?
Yes, very much. It's Flash as a standalone tool, and then there's this small world of tools that are compatible with Flash or produce things in Flash. So that tools we use in e-learning, for example, that will take PowerPoint slides and turn them into Flash movies. And there's a lot of that in the marketplace.
I imagine assessment is pretty important. Do you have a particular assessment engine, something you build in-house that goes along with your training?
Yes, we do three kinds of assessments usually. There are assessments that are fairly straightforward, multiple choice, matching, or kind of hotspot questions where you identify an area in a picture where you ought to be doing something like clicking, or often that's when you're learning about software. And those assessments are made through tools that are extensions to authoring environments. So we use Articulate Presenter a lot, and there's a tool called Quizmaker that adds that functionality. But then we have scenario-based tests that are totally custom built. Often they're part of a larger Flash-based training program where a question is posed to you by a physician, let's say. And then you pick your answer, and depending on what you pick, different things happen. You get different kinds of remediation. And then there are other kinds of simulations that aren't so much real-world, you know, places, but simulating software environments where we're training someone on a computer system, and so we're simulating their interaction, and we create tests out of that where they have to accomplish certain tasks.
Anything new on the horizon that you hope to incorporate?
I don't think there's so much new in the sense that there are concepts that are radically new. I think that certain ideas like personalizing the learning are becoming more and more realities. You know, it's easier and easier, or let's say it's less dauntingly difficult to actually do some of that. So it's more implementing ideas that have been around for a while. I'd say, I guess, the two trends that we experience the most, or we kind of participate in the most, in the education side, and then I think this spills over to museums and nonprofits, there's the whole users contributing to content, right? The Web 2.0 phenomenon, and the idea that what you want to cultivate are communities, and that there's all kinds of value to them, you know, the individual participants, and to whoever's hosting the site in having those communities exist and contribute. And, you know, the tools have come along that make it easier for that to happen, lower the threshold, you know, to create those kinds of sites and maintain them. And in the corporate side, there's that too. I mean, there's a lot of interest in that. And then there's also what I referred to earlier, this awareness that you want to integrate your e-learning with other things you're doing, really your overall approach to managing a change and other kinds of communication and resources that you make available for people.
You know, traditionally, a user will have to log into a training application, but I could envision a well-integrated working environment where a company or an institution, their control panel that they work in to do their daily work is well-integrated with training and assessment, that they could sort of get help, you know, not the sort of the intrusive Microsoft type dancing paperclip helper, but something that's well integrated and almost employs sort of artificial intelligence to see that the person maybe can accomplish something in an easier fashion and brings up a training snippet of some kind.
Yeah, I think the experience we've had with those ambitions is that the technology is less a barrier than political or cultural issues within an organization. You know, I was just looking the other day at a really nice product by Ninth House that you may know, the Ninth House company. They do very good video-based simulations. And it's something like you say, I mean, it's not embedded in any one organization, but it's sort of a personalized learning environment. And there's not only the simulation with this elaborate stories, you're out in the Wild West, you're doing all kinds of things and learning about management skills, but there's an area for a discussion and additional resource materials. It sort of combines, you know, for those of us with an academic background, it sort of combines the tools that you might have in eCollege, Blackboard, or WebCT with an e-learning module in an integrated environment. And so there are companies that are doing things like that, and I'm sure there are companies that are doing what you're talking about. But when I think about the clients we happen to be working with, there's a challenge to who's going to sponsor that learning environment, what's going to be in it, who's going to have control over it, who's going to pay for it. It's complicated. Even the baby steps sometimes become points of stumbling.
You mentioned Blackboard, which is the learning management system at Thomas Jefferson University, and of course there are several other similar kinds of learning management systems, but I've always been kind of disappointed in the tools that they give you to develop. You put up your Word file or your PowerPoint, or you have to, you know, pay a design team to build something for you at a pretty high expense.
Let me just say first, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I've lived that reality where faculty are very limited. Those environments aren't really set up for faculty to be authors in the sense you and I might think of being an author in really creating interesting, creative, engaging e-learning. It's more like the faculty member posts up documents, identifies some discussion topics, and manages a gradebook, which in itself, I mean, I think that can be very helpful. And there's this whole other side to e-learning, you know, the LMS, and on the faculty side, the online gradebook. I mean, a lot of that administrative burden being offloaded into those systems can be great. But what I've seen faculty do is they just have to work around. So a specific tool, well, some of these tools I was mentioning before, like Articulate Presenter. Another one, I think better known in the academic environment, is Empatica. And they would both take PowerPoint slides and convert them, one, into Flash movies. That's what Articulate Presenter does. And then the other into Java applets. But either way, all you really have to do is do your authoring in PowerPoint. You run the conversion, and then you upload those files into your system. And so I remember working with faculty to figure out the place and the way to upload those files into eCollege or other Blackboard, those kinds of environments. And then they would play back. With PowerPoint, I was able to synchronize audio to things and put in graphics and have animation. And then I could get that into my course. So that's one way.
And now we just have to get the faculty to not put, you know, 20 lines of text on one slide.
Yeah, but that's the other side of it. Faculty time, faculty training, and then the schools are wary, less so than private companies, but they're wary of what faculty may put up there. Who owns it is a big deal, right? And then the publishing houses prefer to have you upload their prepackaged modules, which may be great or may not be what you need.
Everybody's talking about social media and social networking. How do you see that affecting what you do in e-learning?
Well, you've probably heard the cliche, just build it and they will not come, you know, that a lot of people put these tools up. They seem wonderful. We know we want to be able to collaborate more efficiently, maybe more intimately in some ways, more creatively, all kinds of good things. But people are busy. They're overwhelmed with tools that they may already have available. I'm talking about in the workplace. But I think in any environment, you have to ask yourself first, what do people need to do? And even better, what are they really passionately concerned about doing, either because it's their job or because it's maybe it's a hobby, but it's something that really drives them. And then they'll go in and use the tool. And whether they need to post content or create a bunch of links in a wiki or contribute to a survey, whatever it is, they'll do it. You know, but if you've overlooked that and you simply make a lot of tools available, there's already a kind of embarrassment of riches. You know, there's just too many places people can go, and it's very unlikely you'll really cultivate a community. The other thing is you've got to have either the community or the content or the urgent need, or ideally all three. And we find whenever we're helping clients where all three are in place from the beginning, it's a no-brainer, you know. But if all three are missing, the community doesn't yet exist, the content isn't there, and there's really no need, man, that's going to be a very, very hard battle to win.
I want to thank you so much. I enjoyed our conversation here, and as I mentioned before, I'll have a link to Night Kitchen Interactive on my website, and also links to some of the other technologies that we talked about. I like to put in my show notes. So thank you very much for your time, and continued success.
Thanks, Rod, very much. I look forward to checking out your website and your shows.
If you want to learn more about Night Kitchen Interactive, go to my show notes and you'll see the link there, and also a link to several of the topics we talked about. And you also see a link there to some of the products and companies that Juan mentioned in the interview. So stay tuned for the cover song based on Bohemian Rhapsody. I think you'll get a kick out of it. And until next time, have a great week.
Please leave Rod feedback at 610-616-2199.
Is this the real price? Is this just fantasy? Financial landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up at your buys and see. Cause I bought it high, watched it blow, rating high, value low. Anyway the fan goes, doesn't really matter to me. To me. Mama just killed my fund, quoted CDOs instead, pulled the trigger, now it's dead. Mama, I had just begun, these CDOs have blown it all away. We'll be right back.
bed.
Burner key, can you save the whole market?
Bundles of you is very, very frightening.
Super senior,
CDO.
Magnifico.
I'm on a subprime CDO fantasy.
He's on a subprime CDO fantasy. Spare the market, call your baby for home.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Hello to the ground, we will not let you go, let it go.
Mamma mia, mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go.
There's a big man, a devil for a side. For me.
So you think you'll get from me and spit in my eye? In the mountain and call me and leave me to die.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.